人。Will Dalai Lama address the Hashem after the shiur is over? Taras Hamishpacha. The very words are comparatively new. In standard postim, Rishonim, Achronim, even contemporary Sfarim, we don't find the two words Taras Hamishpacha, translated as family purity, used often. It's more a term that Klal Yisrael adapted recently to describe halachas of nida. But these two words, taras hamishpacha, family purity, show the importance that Klal Yisrael gives to this area of halacha. Because it's not only halachas nida, these halachas define the nature of the family. This mitzvah is a pride of Klal Yisrael. Of course, there are benefits. The Gemara, famous Gemara Nida, says that Klal Yisrael is blessed from the Torah with the constant phenomenon of a honeymoon. Every month, there are times that the husband and wife are prohibited to each one another, then permitted. It constantly causes a freshness and a reinvigoration of the marriage. One of many benefits that Chazal talk about Hilchos Nida, but essentially, the reason we fulfill the halachos of Nida, of Taras Mishpacha, is that it's Ratzon Hashem. This is what Hashem wants. Some of it is Min HaTorah, other parts Midirabbanan. In any mitzvah, any part of Ratzon Hashem, Midiraisa or Midirabbanan, but especially one that Klal Yisrael attaches such importance to, needs Chazara. As my 12th grade Rebbe, Rabbi Bergman, used to say, if you don't chazer, forget it. Especially this mitzvah, halachas of nida, usually we learn as chasanim, before we're married, before it's really nodeya. And we know from experience, when you learn halachas before they're nodeya, and you can't put them into practice right away, then there's a space in time, then you put them into practice. It's hard to remember and to appreciate when you're learning when it didn't happen yet, and when it happens, do you remember what you learned? Furthermore, many situations in nida, even if they learned when a chassan learns before his wedding, don't come up so frequently. So even if you remember some of the basics, it's hard to remember what to do in that specific situation. Also, those that have been blessed with the nes nidla, having a child, through a period of pregnancy, almost 9 months without the monthly cycle of Hilchos Nida, often find themselves in a situation that they need to review, even if their learner's chasan was perfect, because it's a 9-month hiatus from Hilchos Nida. So it's a big zechus we have as the shul to have Taras Mishpacha review, to remind us how important Taras Mishpacha is, and to make sure that our observance of these halachos is up to par. Because of the defining nature, because of the time factor in the shiur, we're going to hold off on questions till the end. And if there are any questions, anything that's ambiguous, we'll talk about it at the end of the shiur. The most important rule in Hilchos Nida. For this alone, it's the night to come to two shiurim. The most significant rule is Asei Lecha Rav. Make for yourself a Rebbe, a person you can relate to both in Halacha and Hashkafa, a person that you feel comfortable asking questions, that you don't feel embarrassed when it's too small, you don't feel overwhelming when it's too large, a person you feel you can relate to and can relate to you, both in Halacha and Hashkafa. You feel open with, you can discuss matters of Hilchos Nida with. Asei Lecha Rav. People often don't ask enough shailos. As my wife often points out when she teaches kalas, in many situations of Hilchos Nida, the wife is the most machmir. The husband is a little bit more meikel. And the Rav is the most meikel. Koach Tetei Radif. The more you know, the more you can be meikel. And people are depriving themselves because of sometimes erroneous sensitivities from asking a Rav Shaila, the ones that lose, unfortunately, are they themselves. Asay v'charav. The three rules of Hilchos Nida are ask. People don't ask enough shaylos. In every community, it's a problem. People are embarrassed sometimes. They feel like they're mashiach the Rav or they're mashiach themselves to bring beditos, to bring maros, to call up the Rav and ask shaylos. That's what Rabbanim are here for. It's a big zechus for a Rav to answer a shayla. And it's one cannot underscore the importance enough of asking shaylos. Asay l'charav. And again, if you take nothing from these two shirim, aside from Pizup, in that area of Asay l'charav, for that alone, it's Kedai. The basic anatomy of Hilchos Nida, the nes, the open miracle of creation of a baby takes place in the womb, in the uterus, what Chazal called the Makar. And the uterus has a lining made of tissue and blood cells called the endometrium. Approximately every month, in Latin we call it the menses, menstruation, approximately every month, once a month, the endometrial lining sheds. When the endometrium or the endometrial lining sheds, that is a period that renders a woman into a nida. But it's only the endometrial lining of the uterus. Any dam, any blood from any other part of a woman's reproductive tract, whether it's higher up than the uterus or lower down, the vaginal canal, if it can be isolated, it's actually coming from that area, is not going to render the woman into a nida. The only issue of nida applies when we have blood from the endometrium of the uterus. Now, practically speaking, it's sometimes hard to differentiate. If a woman has blood, where does the blood come from? Sometimes the doctor can determine it. Sometimes it's too late, a doctor can't even determine it. So practically speaking, sometimes if a woman has blood from her reproductive tract, we might have to be choshesh that it was really endometrial blood. But in isolation, the only blood which is problematic as far as Hilchos Nida is concerned is endometrial blood. Any blood from the vaginal canal, despite the fact that it's sometimes inches or centimeters away from the uterus, is not dam nida at all. What happens when a woman sees blood from her endometrium? When the uterine lining sloughs off, the Gemara says, halacha maisa, we presume, that even if a woman has a tiny bit of blood, tipas dam kachardol, a tiny bit of blood, she needs to stay yosheves ala shivanatim. She needs to wait 7 clean days before being permitted to her husband once again. And as you're familiar, whenever a woman has any bit of blood, she needs to wait 7 clean days. After she counts those 7 clean days, she's permitted then to go to the mikvah on the night after that, the night of the 8th. So she sees dam one day. We're going to expand on these halachos. The basic halacha is if she sees blood any one day, then she needs to count from that day 7 clean days, which she has no blood altogether. And after those 7 days are over, the next night, she's permitted to go to the mikvah and become permissible again to be reunited with her husband. However, within this idea of tipas dam kechardol, of a little bit of blood, even the side of a mustard seed, the Mishnah, the Gemara tell us that there are two different categories. There's the menstrual cycle, the normal cycle for her to see blood, and spotting, what we call a kesem. The menstrual cycle, the normal event of women seeing blood, is asur midaraisa. That's a woman's period. But kesem, a woman's spotting, is only asur midrabanan. What defines if something is considered nida midaraisa, a period, menstrual blood, or spotting, which is only a kesem? What defines whether it's midaraisa or midrabanan? The Gemara tells us a very simple criterion. If a woman has a hargasha, she has a major sensation that the blood is coming out of her body, then she knows that's her period. If there's no sensation, then it's not considered normal blood. It's considered something which is only asur midrabanan. But most poskim point out, nowadays we don't have this siman. We don't have this sign of a hargasha. So for us, what differentiates whether the blood a woman sees is menstrual blood, which is prohibited min HaTorah, or spotting, which is only prohibited min Drabbanon. We try as best as we can to determine which one a woman is seeing, and essentially, it's important to speak to one's Rav in order to clarify. What you might think is the easiest way to determine whether it's considered your period, a woman's period, or it's considered just spotting, is based upon time of the month. If it's 30 days since your last period, it's going to be considered a period. If it's 2 days since your last period, then it's probably spotting. But that's not true. We do not use time as a criterion whatsoever. If it's normal seeing, if it's a normal, as the appearance of a normal period, even if it's 2 days later, she's going to be considered a menstruant, which is going to be Asur Midaraisa. And if it's only spotting, even if it's 60 days later, she's still going to only be creating Tumma Midrabanan. What then differentiates between Nida Min HaTorah, Nida Midrabanan? If it has the general appearance of a normal flow, for example, some criteria that Rabbanim use are, if it's at least 50% of the heaviest day of her normal period, that's going to be considered a situation where she's Tumma Midaraisa. Approximately 50%. Very similar to a period. But again, nothing to do with time. That's quantity. Others suggest if it's similar to the first day of her normal period. If it's like the first day of her normal period, if it's that much blood, that's going to make her Tumma Midaraisa. Anything short of that, if it's a few drops, or even significantly more than a few drops, if it's not as much as her normal period by any stretch of the imagination, she'll only be Tumma Midrabanan. But it's important not to make the mistake to think that, oh, the differentiation is between how soon it was after her most recent period. That is no halachic bearing. Rather, it's based on appearance. If it seems to be like her normal period, usually in quantity, then it's considered an Isur Midaraisa. If it's not similar to her normal period, if it's significantly less, it's going to be Tumma only Midrabanan. But these are some ways of eyeballing it. When push comes to shove, it's very important in such a situation, as in every area, asel farav. Determine for yourselves, by issuing a rav, the person you normally have shilas to, if the situation of bleeding is an issur midaraisa or issur midrabanan. Why? Why does it make a difference? The woman has dam, she's tumea. Who cares if it's midaraisa or midrabanan? Isn't that academic? There are many kulas that we have, three famous kulas that apply to any nida, which is Tumma Midrabanan, which don't apply if the dam is not Midaraisa. So it's very important to determine if the dam is Midrabanan. For example, Chazal said, since Chazal were the ones who were in charge of making a woman Tumma Midrabanan when it's spotting, again, when she's menstruating, she's Tumma Midaraisa. But if she's not menstruating, it's only spotting, because it's much less blood, which is determined by a rav, not by person who is not familiar with the halachos, determined by a rav to be only spotting, she's going to be only Tumma Midrabanan. Chazal said that blood could only create a problem if it's more than a penny size. If there's any blood less than the size of a penny, even if it's bright red, she is tahora. If it's real period, then Chazal are powerless to say that she should be tahora if it's less than a penny. But in any situation where it's not a normal period, it's only a din midrabanan, it's only testing, it's only spotting, she's going to be tahora if the blood is less than a penny size. And less than a penny size doesn't mean that there's less than a penny size entirely. If every spot is less than a penny size, she will be considered tahora. Number two, Chazal said that a woman is tahora if all the blood that comes out from her is only going to be dam midrabanan, dam that's going to make her Tumma Midrabanan anyway. If it's only spotting, a woman is tahora if the blood comes in any material which is not white. Not only with Chazal gozer in anything more than the size of a penny, they also were only gozer in anything they were only gozer on something which is white. If it's not white, she's tahora. And this is an important kula. It means that whenever a woman is tahora, she's in a situation where she does not have any reason to make herself tumea, it's possible that for some reason her uterus might emit a little bit of blood. In such a situation, though, if her uterus emits only a little bit of blood, she would be tumeya only midrabanan. So she would like to avoid that tumah. How does she avoid that tumah? By avoiding anything which is white. Which means, clearly, of course, to avoid white undergarments, which would catch the blood. But not only white undergarments, white bedding, white mattress pads, white hosiery with white lining, or any even colored hosiery with a white lining, anything which is white, which might have blood, can make a woman tamei unnecessarily. Because if she spots on something which is black, she's totally tahara. If she spots on something which is white, as long as that spot is more than the size of a dris, more than the size of a penny, she's going to be tamei. Why bring herself into a problem? Which is why the Rama already tells us it's very advisable for a woman who has no reason not to always make sure her body comes in contact only with non-white garments. No white towels, no white bathrobes, no white pajamas, no white sheets, no white mattress pads, no white pillowcases, anything which is white should be off limits. Again, there's no halacha that she has to, but it's prudent. Since spotting is only to name a drabanan, why bother creating problems? She's allowed to avoid it. Why make her create problems for herself? Not only white, but anything closely resembling white. There's a discussion in the postum exactly how far removed it has to be from white in order to make it white. Is it considered, does white mean, if you look at the ceiling here, the ceiling is white, but then the walls are cream, and then the cloth is a different color white, and the fluorescent lights are a different color white. All these whites we try to avoid because they're all in the parsha of white. As you move further away from whites, sometimes there's a little bit of a gray area as to what's considered white, what's considered gray. But lamaisa, anything which is resembling white, stay far away from. Why bother dealing with problems and problems? And Chazal has a third kula as well for anything which is a kesem, which is spotting, which is that Chazal only goes there. A woman can only become tameya if it's not her normal period, if it's on something which is metabol tuma. If the surface that the dam falls on is something which can accept tuma, halakhically can become tamei. But if in the realm of halakha, we're not familiar with the halakha of tuma matara really nowadays anyway, but if something in halakha could become tamei in other areas of halakha, then it can become tamei in Hilchos Nida as well. But if this object cannot become tamei in any other area of halacha, even if blood falls on it and it's white, and the blood is more than the sheer dris, she's still considered tahora. The blood is powerless to make her tameya, because anything which is not metabol tuma cannot be metabol kesamim as well. Spotting is going to have total irrelevance on something which is not metabol tuma. For example, if a woman has spotting on a toilet seat is not metabol tuma because of, or a toilet. A toilet is not metabol tuma because a toilet is connected to the building, which is connected to the floor, and this building cannot become tummy. We know if chas v'shalom there would be a mace in a building, a coin can't be in the building because the building is a conduit. If a coin and a mace are in the same building, that's a problem because a coin can be in the same building as the mace, but the building doesn't become tummy. So if a woman would somehow splatter blood on a wall or on a toilet seat, which is connected to the wall, connected to the floor, which is connected to the rest of the building, that's all not metabol tuma. It's not metabol kesamim. There's no problem with that as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein is an unbelievable kula within the realm of ein metabol tuma, that any disposable paper, tissue papers, toilet papers, are likewise not metabol kesamim. Which means if a woman finds dam on toilet paper or on a tissue, that is not going to create a problem. Woman finds blood on a sanitary pad, that's not going to create a problem, even if it's more than a sheer dris, even if it's white. Because anything which is not metabol tuma is not metabol kesamim, and included in the realm of not metabol tuma are even things that are disposable, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's been told to me, it's a well-known fact, that Rav Moshe Feinstein himself tried not to rely on this kula l'chatchila. He tried himself, if he had a certain situation where something was on a pad, let's say, to try to find another way of being made on this. Rav Moshe did not like to rely on his own kula himself. So in our yeshiva also, we try not to rely on this kula l'chatchila. Meaning we wouldn't say, don't worry, just put on a pad, and whatever dam you see, you can just ignore, because it's not metabol tuma. Ideally, we try to say that we're not going to rely on this Rav Moshe if we don't have to. But ex post facto, if a woman has blood on a pad, or on toilet paper, or on a tissue, that's going to be tahara. We rely on Rav Moshe b'di'evad. B'di'evad meaning once she did it already. It's not something we recommend, but it's still going to be a safety net we have once it's done. So in summation, we have three specific kulas that apply to spotting, which don't apply to menstruation, which is why it's very important to determine whether any specific time a woman sees blood is menstruation, which has none of these leniencies we discussed, or is it considered only spotting, which is going to make her tahara if she has one of these three leniencies, if it's less than the size of a penny in any given spot, if it is on something which is not white, or if it's on something which is not mekabel tumah. However, despite these leniencies of spotting, there are three situations which might otherwise have been considered spotting, which because of a footnote in halacha, because of one concern in halacha, even if they otherwise would have been considered a spot, we boost them up to being a period instead. Meaning, there are three situations that had the blood appeared, we would have considered the blood spotting. But since the blood was accompanied with one of these three phenomena, we instead consider the blood as a real period, with none of the leniencies we discussed, instead of spotting. Those three situations are, if the blood comes with internal examination, number one. If she puts something inside the vaginal canal, in order to see if there's, and it comes out with blood, then even if it's a tiny bit, even if it's something that we would have otherwise considered spotting, she instead is tamea min haTorah. If she's tamea min haTorah, we can't apply the kulas of something less than a penny, not white, or in a mekabel tumah. Which is why there's a major difference between using a sanitary pad and using a tampon. If a woman finds a little blood on a sanitary pad, let's say it's even less than a sheared wrist, the size of a dime on a sanitary pad, what's the halacha? She should be tahara. But if she finds the same amount of blood on a tampon, which is inserted, she's tamea. Even though it's so small. What if the tampon would be dark? So we probably still wouldn't have the same leniency. Because these three leniencies only apply if it's a situation where there's no internal insertion. If anything is inserted internally, the dam, instead of being a kesem, is treated as if it's tamea min haTorah. Tamea min haRais. This is also why any bedifa cloth, if a woman ever has a suffix, as we'll discuss later, never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, do bedifa, unless you have to. You have to, as we'll discuss, means during the Zayinikim, during the 7 days, or during, as we'll discuss next week, the Yom HaVeses, the time you think the periods are going to come every week, every month. For any situation, I think maybe it was a period that was starting, I checked. No reason. Never, ever, ever check. Because all you're doing is creating problems. And that's even if it's a tiny bit of blood. Oh, I thought there was a tiny bit of blood. Every so often people call up and they say, you know, I had a tiny bit of blood on the bedifa cloth. I thought it was so little. And since I'm not supposed to appear anyway, I threw it out. That tiny bit of blood could have made all the difference in the world. Could have been, had it been blood, could have made her tamea min haTorah. Even though it's a tiny bit. Any small blood on something which is inserted internally, we're concerned, renders her tamea min haRaisa instead of min haRabbanan. Secondly, the second chumrah we have, which should make something which otherwise been considered only spotting into a period, is if it comes immediately following or during urination. If it comes during that sensation of urination, then instead of being only midrabanan, it's going to be considered tamei midaraisa. Which is why, even though we mentioned the Rav Moshe Feinstein, toilet paper and tissues, which are disposable, are not a problem if it's a pesem, it's not always so easy to have that kula. If a woman urinated, and right after urination, she cleans herself with a tissue and found dam, it's a very serious shaila. Because if blood comes immediately following urination, then even though that blood, as far as quantity, would have been considered spotting, since immediately following the sensation of urination, were concerned that maybe the feeling of her period was masked, and that is Tamei Midaraisa instead of Midrabanan. So yes, it's disposable. Yes, a tiny bit. But it doesn't make a difference. Because she's Tamei Midaraisa, probably. And therefore, we can't have the leniencies of Chassamim Midrabanan. There are some posts that are Meitel in case of urination. The Chazon Ish, notably, was Meitel in case of urination, and so we don't have to have this concern. But this, as in all areas of Nida, is a case in which Aseil Charav, you have to ask. It's a machlokas apostim. But it's best to avoid. If a woman is in a situation where she goes to the bathroom, she should train herself not to look. Don't look. It's a hard thing. Especially for a woman who's newly married to make the transition from not looking at all to consciously not looking. Whenever a woman goes to the bathroom, don't look. The famous story Rav Willard always says over, that once there was a person that was asking a lot of shilas, she had problems spotting Hilchos Nida problems in the bathroom, on the toilet, or after cleaning herself. So he said, my psak to you now is, take out the light bulb in your bathroom. Don't look. Make sure you don't look. What we don't know can't hurt us. But we do know it can often be a problem. So even though blood would ordinarily be considered spotting, if it comes in sync, in tandem with urination, often it could be midaraisa, which means there's no coolness that we discuss, and it's a very serious child. The third time that we say that blood, which could have been spotting, is instead boosted up to become nida midaraisa, without the leniencies, is if the blood comes during the time of sexual intercourse. If blood is found on his body or in her body during or after sexual intercourse, we're concerned that the sensation of sexual intercourse masked the period, and in reality, that tiny bit of blood was really dam midaraisa, not midrabanan. And therefore, we don't have the leniencies again that might otherwise apply to chassamim. So anything which is used by a couple for personal cleaning after cohabitation should not be looked at. Because if they find blood on a towel or some disposable material they use to clean themselves after they're together, it could, in theory, cause a very serious shaila. Even if it's a tiny bit of blood, we don't have the leniencies of nida midrabanan. Since it came in tandem with sexual intercourse, that's going to be a concern of nida midaraisa, and therefore even a little bit of blood is going to be a problem. But in all three of these cases, cases of internal insertion, urination, or sexual intercourse, we have the same policies they have in the United States Army. Don't ask, don't tell. What you don't know can't hurt you. Don't look for trouble. Which means, firstly, first and foremost, never, ever, ever do a bedika when it's not necessary. All you can do is cause trouble. As Rabbi Forst points out, even though the Gemara, there's a Mishnah, the Mishnah says in Masechet Nida, Kol Yad Amarba Livdol Kodoshim, anyone that chats more when we deal with women is praiseworthy. But things changed. For many reasons, that's why the Postim, as Rabbi Forst points out, perhaps the simplest reason is that now bodies are more sensitive. Well, I say it's not true. Don't check unless you absolutely have to. Never do an unnecessary bedika. Don't look when going to the bathroom. Never look. Don't look at tampons. Don't look at the body. A man should not look at his body after sexual intercourse or at the clothes used for sanitary purposes for himself. A woman should not look at her body as well or for any clothes used. Whatever you can do to avoid looking, do not look. Furthermore, in certain situations where there's only spotting, it's only nida that will be tamei midrabanan, and nida that might even be tahara. Let's say she has a little bit of blood, less than a sheer dris, or a little bit more blood on something which is not a kabbal tumah or something which is colored. Any spotting might be indicative of a period which is coming soon. Alternatively, it might be some dormant period, which will only be induced by sexual intercourse. Which is why we have a rule that once a woman spots, if the Rav passions that spotting is halakhically insignificant, she's tahara, the couple should still refrain from actual sexual intercourse for 24 hours. She's not a nida. There are no harchatos. None of the other harchatos we'll discuss next week, Rezul Hashem, apply whatsoever. No harchatos except from actual tashmish. Again, firstly, it could be the period is coming very soon. And furthermore, it could be the period is even induced by sexual intercourse. And thirdly, the worst thing to happen would be for the couple to actually be together and for a period to start when they're together. So the rule of thumb is, whenever there's any spotting, always avoid actual sexual intercourse for 24 hours, although none of the other halachos apply whatsoever. There are some additional situations which make a woman into a nida, even though they're nothing to do with the normal period. Most notably, birth. When a woman gives birth, she becomes a nida. And after a woman gives birth, it's important to just keep in mind, often it's going to take a much longer time than the normal period in order to remove the status of nida. So a woman becomes a nida when she gives birth, but for the removal of that status takes a lot more time than it does to normally remove the status of nida. The normal status of nida is removed after around 2 weeks. For birth, it's not uncommon to have 6 weeks of separation between the time that a woman gives birth to the time she can return to her husband again after going to the mikvah once she gives birth. The simple reason for this is that when a woman has a period normally, her period stops, endometrium just stops sloughing off, and then her body regenerates, and then the period stops. But when a woman gives birth, her body not only has endometrial lining which sloughed off, or other things that came out when she gave birth, but the uterus has to heal. So when the uterus has to heal, there's a lot more blood that can come out. It's not just a 2-week period, which is normal, but that healing process takes a longer time. Which is why it's not abnormal during labor, during period after birth, for a woman to have 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days that she finds herself clean, and then have the period start, the counting have to start all over again, because once she did something, she opened up the uterus, somehow she just moved in some way, opened up the uterus, a wound in the uterus a little bit, all of a sudden now she starts again. Even though that could happen sometimes with nida, it's pretty uncommon for a woman in day five to start her period, to start seeing over again. But it's very common when a woman gives birth to sometimes have many clean days and be disappointed because her body didn't heal yet and she's going to start counting again. And it's an important thing just to be aware of, that these things happen. Practically, it's worthwhile for a woman to avoid physical labor as much as she can. It's not always easy. Once you give birth, then you have to bend down in the pack and play, bend down in the crib, get up in the middle of the night to nurse, all these things that Baruch Hashem, part of the bracha of having children. But if whatever a woman can do to avoid physical labor usually helps her uterus heal better in order to reduce the number of days that she's going to be a nida, recuperating after birth. And it's interesting to note that in general, doctors usually advise a couple to refrain from sexual intercourse for 6 weeks after birth anyway. So even if a woman would be able to go to the mikvah 2 weeks after her birth, it would only solve the problem of the harchatos, would not solve the issue of being together anyway. And usually, approximately, doctor's orders are 6 weeks, and the period stopping are usually somewhat in sync with one another. Berech. For each couple, they're different. Some people have 3 weeks after labor, some people have 2 months after labor. But in general, usually that 6 week rule of the doctor and the 6 weeks of nida stopping are around the same time. And it's important to realize as well, this is out of Hilchos Nida and back into Taras HaMishpacha in the larger sense, as far as Mishpacha, that it's very common for both the father and the mother, both the husband and the wife, to be undergoing stresses during the time of immediately following birth, which can be exaggerated and exacerbated by the fact that they now have to refrain from touching one another as well. Fatherhood, whether it's for the first time or the new time, itself can cause stress. It's added responsibilities, a dynamic, a change in one's family. Motherhood as well. Mother itself, whether it's for the first time or the new time, can cause stress. Also, for a woman, pregnancy, labor, birth, nursing, all those are regulated by hormones. And a woman can be much more at the mercy of hormones during that time because of so many hormonal changes that take place in her body. So it's just important to realize that that time could sometimes be a more difficult time for a couple because of the newness, the stress created by the beautiful bracha, which is still new and can create a different dynamic, as well as the hormonal changes, which come in tandem with the fact that the husband and wife to not be together, sometimes it does pose more stress, which is an important thing just to be aware of. Labor. Labor itself, even before a woman gives birth, labor itself creates a status of nida, although it's machlokes poskim when nidus begins. Some poskim say that it's as early as when the water breaks. Others say that it's some point far into the advanced stages of labor. Others say it's some point in between. So in this situation, as well as any other aspect of nida, asel harav, ask. One thing that's important to be aware of is that Nifal Sabore, one of the tremendous miracles in the Nes Nidla of giving birth, is that when the uterus has a baby inside it, the cervix, which is the gateway from the uterus to the vagina, is covered up with a mucus plug. It's covered up to make sure that nothing can come in and nothing can go out. Often, a few days before a woman gives birth, that mucus plug is going to shed. It's going to come out. Often a woman can see it in the bathroom, and it's a little scary, because she has what they call a bloody show. The mucus plug has a lot of blood with it because it was in her system for such a long time. Halakhically, is that blood considered damnida? No, it's not uterine blood. But it's very hard to differentiate. Sometimes it could be mixed with uterine blood. So it's important to be aware of the phenomenon of the mucus plug and to know that if such a situation happens a few days before pregnancy, there's a lot of blood to ask the Rav to determine whether it's really a mucus plug, which is halakhically not nida, or something else, which might create a concern of nida instead. Doctor's visits could sometimes cause a problem of nida. If the doctor scrapes off a little bit of the endometrium and takes it out, even though the woman's not in the middle of her period, it's a very serious child for her nida. If the doctor dilates a woman in order to check something, it's a shayla. In most situations, we presume, in 99% of the cases, doctor's visits do not create any nida shayla at all. However, it's important to ask. A woman should ask the doctor, what are you doing? What's going on? And when she finds out, she can talk to the Rav that she feels comfortable. Ask some shaylas to know if that's a problem or not. Again, in most situations, it's not a problem. In today's day and age, most dilation is not a problem. Most situations are not halakhically problematic. But it's important to be aware to know what's going on. Once a woman is a nida, either midaraisa or midrabanan, whether it's midaraisa because it's a normal period with the amount of blood that she normally has, or midrabanan without one of these three leniencies, it was more than the sheer dris on white, on something which is mekabel tumah. In order to remove that status, we need to have zaynatim. 7 clean days without any blood. Those 7 days without any blood consist of 3 different halachos. Number 1, the 7 clean days must have hefsek tahara. A bedika, using a bedika cloth they sell in all the mikvos, a small piece of cloth, to determine that the blood stops. The hefsek tahara makes her go from the status of being huchsika liros to huchsika shalaliros. She had a chazakah, a presumption that she was seeing blood for many days. In order to stop that chazakah and make her transfer from a woman who was prone to see blood to a woman who is prone not to see blood, we need to have a hefsek tahara. She needs to check herself. That is day zero. That is not one of the 7 clean days. That's the preamble. In order to make her able to have 7 clean days, she needs to first check herself on day zero to determine that she's tahara. Determine that the blood stopped. Once she determines the blood stops, the next day she can begin to count zaynatim. So the first thing we need for the zaynatim is the introduction. Day zero, hefsek tahara. The next thing are the 7 clean days, zaynatim, 7 clean days of bedikos, in which she checks and she affirms her status of not having blood. And the third thing, a very old Ashkenazic minhag, is to wear white undergarments. A woman should wear white undergarments only during that period of zaynatim. As I mentioned before, a woman should not wear white undergarments any other time. It's just silly. But during zaynatim, the old minhag is, very old minhag, that a woman should wear levanim, wear white undergarments. We're going to now analyze each of these 3 steps. Hefsek tahara. A normal period usually lasts for approximately 5 days. Biologically, that's usually what happens. Halakhically, hefsek tahara may not be before day 5. The reason for that, the Gemara tells us, is that a woman whenever a woman is peleta shechvazera, if she has any seminal emission during her 7 days, she's going to not be able to count any that is a seminal emission. Semen, we presume, only is powerful for 3 days, and based upon a little bit of a cheshbon, Chazal say the maximum amount of time of 3 days is moved to 5 days. So for the first 5 days that a woman starts seeing blood, she can't count zaynikiyim, because we're concerned. Again, as a gzeira, that during one of those 5 days, had she counted zaynikiyim, she really would have a seminal emission during that time, and semen that she would give off from her body, that came from her husband, that she would give off, would be considered a problem that would not let her count that day as zaynikiyim. Therefore, Chazal said, the minhag is, whenever a woman sees any blood, she cannot count the 17 days until those 5 days that in theory she might be able, whether she was with her husband in actuality or not is irrelevant, that she might be able to have any semen come out of her body, those 5 days are off limits. So a woman can never count zaynikiyim before the 5 days pass from the time her period starts. However, if a woman for some reason, halakhically, is not able to be with her husband, even before the period starts, let's say she was spotting. We mentioned that when a woman spots, even if the period didn't start, she has to refrain from tashmish with her husband for 24 hours. Then her period lasts 4 days. We can do the mathematics, add the 1 day that she can be with her husband halakhically because of spotting, and the 4 days of the period, that already is considered day five. So even though the period lasted only 4 days, if for some halakhic reason she was not able to be with her husband even for a day before, or let's say she's spotting for 2 days, even though spotting does not make her into a nida, she's not going to have any harchatos, but she's spotting for 2 days and she can't have tashmish for 2 days. As we mentioned, she can't have tashmish when she's spotting. Then, even if the period lasts only 3 days, already on day five, she may do her hefsatara, even though she didn't have a full period of 5 days, because halakhically, all we need is that she's not able to be with her husband for 5 days. There's a mafalka supposed to have, what if, let's say, one of the days is Yom Kippur? She has Yom Kippur for 1 day. Couple is prohibited to each other in Yom Kippur. Then there's 4 days of a period. Does that count or not? Maybe since the two halakhic reasons, Yom Kippur and then 4 days of a period, maybe that's enough. It's a machlokes apostim, but we presume that everyone agrees that if there's a halakhic reason for within Nida, such as a spotting or some other reason that she cannot be with her husband, that's enough to start the 5 days in order to let her count the 7 days afterwards. The minhag of the Shulchan Aruch tells us is that Sfardim only count 4 days instead of 5 days before counting Zaynitim, although Rav Avadia writes that in ideal situations, even Sfardim usually count 5 days instead of 4 days. In most situations, it's not really Sonar Deya. Most periods last around 5 days. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, we know one of the important talachos of being a Jew in New York is that in the summer it's important to go to the bungalow colonies. This is the Masorah. Tradition. We go to the bungalow colonies in the summer. So Rav Moshe writes, if you're being if you're following the minhag of a seder to go to the bungalows in the summer, and the minhag is, the way it works often is that the wife goes up for the whole summer, and husbands come up from Thursday to Sunday. Thursday night, let's say, or Friday morning, till Sunday night, and then they go back. So Rav Moshe writes, what's the halacha if we're in a situation where if the woman would count 5 days, then she's going to have to go to the mikvah, let's say, on Monday night. She counts only 4 days. She can count the Zaynikiyim earlier. She'll end up going to the mikvah on Sunday night. So Rav Moshe writes, in certain situations, it's grounds to be made and let her use only 4 days instead of 5 days, or else they'll have to push off their union for another few days. We can count 4 days instead of 5 days. And it's important, Rav Moshe, to know about, not to pass in oneself, pass v'shalom, but to know that such an idea exists. In certain situations, we do say that even Ashkenazim, something can be made with 4 days instead of 5 days, and it's important to have that as a shayla to ask. Never think, oh, it's a chayta complete. We have to use 5 days instead of 4 days. If the need comes up, it's really going to have a lemaisa and aftermina, ask your Rav if in your situation maybe 4 days could be helpful instead of 5 days in any specific time. Hefsek Tara must be before sunset. That means not at sunset, not 1 minute later, not 2 minutes later, but at before sunset. Before sunset has to be before sunset. That means Hefsek Tara has to be finished before sunset. It's a very, very common shaila. My wife was doing vidita and she just remembered a minute later. It's only a minute later. Does that make a difference? Minutes, 1 minute too late. Vidita must be, a hefsek tara must be done before shtia. What happens if it's done after shtia? It counts. It just counts as the next day. Once shtia's there, that means today is over and that's tomorrow. Hefsek Tahara will count for tomorrow. You don't have to do it again. But if a Hefsek Tahara is done even 1 minute after Shkia, we presume that's too late. Rav Moshe has an interesting rule. He's a Das Yachid. Rav Moshe gives a few minutes of a cushion afterwards. Although he's a Das Yachid, many authorities do not accept Rav Moshe's leniency. And it's important to be aware of the phenomenon. Hefsek Tahara means, in order for today to count, if a woman is going to do Hefsek Tahara on Thursday, it must be Thursday before Shkia. Before Shkia means really before Shkia. Not at Shkia, not a minute later, before Shkia Mamash. It's even okay to do Hefsek Tahara in the morning. Usually it doesn't happen. Usually a woman's trying, as the day is ending, to just have Hefsek Tahara just before Shkia. But halakhically, if a woman can do it in the middle of the day or in the morning, atov manayim. It's better to be safe rather than sorry. Even though chatzkila should be done towards the end of the day, it's better at least to do one in the morning to try, because if you miss Shkia, your day off is going to count for the next day instead. Whenever the rule of thumb is that whenever a woman does Hefsek Tahara, let's say she does Hefsek Tahara on Tuesday night. Let's say she does Hefsek today, on Tuesday before Shkia. She goes to the mikvah next week on what we call Tuesday night. Halachically, of course, Tuesday night. Tonight is already Wednesday. But as a rule of thumb, as you know, when a woman does Hefsek, whatever day of the week the woman does Hefsek Tahara, if she does it on Monday, she goes to the mikvah next week on Monday night, what we call Monday night. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that in order to make a Hefsek Tahara complete, the most ideal way of doing a Hefsek Tahara is not only to do a bedikra before Shkia, but after Shkia, to do a moch tachuk. To take usually a bedikra cloth and wrap it up, which is why bedikra cloths usually have a little bit of a strip on them, in order to help a woman put it inside her body, keep it in there for a while, and then pull it out afterwards, to ascertain the blood actually stopped. Not just do a bedikra, but to do a bedikra on a constant basis for a little bit of time to prove the dam stopped. The entire period between Shtia and actual nightfall. Some suggest that a tampon is good enough as well. A tampon, if a woman can insert a tampon also, something which is inside her body to prove that the blood stopped on a consistent basis is ideal. What does Benesh Mashos mean? So some people presume Benesh Mashos means 72 minutes. That's not a very good idea. If a woman keeps a tampon in, especially during that time of the month where she is way past menstruation, she's trying to ready to avoid menstruation, she's counting away from menstruation, or even a bedikulot for 72 minutes, even if they only run a tam shtia for Shabbos, a woman should not leave it in for 72 minutes. That's a very long time if it causes irritation. So usually, if a person wants to do mokhtachot, we presume 20 minutes, half an hour, a very matal opinion of seisot kochavim is necessary for mokhtachot. Certainly not 72 minutes, because it can cause a lot of problems, more harm than good. If a mokhtachot, even if being put in for 20 minutes or half an hour, is causing a problem, causing irritation, or causing unnecessary bleeding, then one should speak to one's rav, and often the rav will suggest not doing the mokhtachot. Mokhtachot is only l'chatchila. It's only chumra l'chatchila. So if a situation occurs where the mokhtachot is causing a problem, it should go. It shouldn't be done. And there are some rabbanim who suggest, Rav Willard, for one, that a person never do a mokhtachuk. Rav Willard has a complicated cheshbon in which he thinks that the way we do mokhtachuk is not even correct altogether. There's no point in doing a mokhtachuk. So why bother doing it if it can only do harm and doesn't do any good? Which is why some don't do a mokhtachuk at all. And some suggest, at least the chasanim, the kalos, people that are newly married, even if you want to do mokhtachuk some time later in life, don't do it in the beginning, because it can cause more harm when the whole idea of entire mishpacha is new. If you want to take it as a chumra later, do it later. According to Rav Willard, there's no need to ever do a mokhtachuk, and others suggest, Shulchan Aruch says one should do it. It's machokas in such a situation as well. Asay lecha rav. Sometimes Hefsek Tahara cannot be done in time, not because of any problem of blood that's coming out now, but because of residual blood. Blood that's been in the woman's body for a day or 2 days, but when you put a bedikra cloth in, that blood comes out. There's no way of knowing if that blood is from today or that blood is from yesterday. So if a woman is having any problem doing a Hefsek Tahara, which is clean, a woman should take advantage of either douching. Douche is French for shower. It's a mini shower, a little bottle with a tube a woman can insert into her body to clean out the vaginal area in order to make sure there's no residual blood. Or the simple bath would be good enough. If a woman wants to take a bath in order to remove the residual blood and make sure there's nothing left, and then do a Hefsek Tahara, Matzav Manayim. That's not a chap. That's totally fine. Let her prove. She has to make sure that the residual blood, which might be causing her problems, is not there anymore. For if Moshe writes, not so fast. The woman takes douches, or takes a bath, and a minute later checks herself and finds no blood, did she really prove anything? Of course not. It could be that she's flowing blood, but we know even if you have a cut in your hand and you wash your hand for at least a few seconds, there'll be no blood. So Rav Moshe writes, you can't take a bath or a douche and then right afterwards do a bedita, because then you're fooling yourself. Rav Moshe writes, if you take the bath or you douche and then, let's say you wait 15 minutes, and then you check yourself, you presume that if there's new blood, it would have come within 15 minutes, then it's okay. And it's a very important trick people are not always aware of, to either douche or to bathe if Hefsek Tahara is hard to attain, because it might be that all the woman has is residual blood, even though it looks like it's blood which is flowing now. Also, as Shtiyah comes, as we're trying to beat the clock and make sure the Hefsek Tahara can be good, it's okay for a woman to do consecutive Hefsek Tahara. She may do Hefsek Tahara, then another one, then another one, then another one, in order to produce one clean Hefsek Tahara. That's okay. Ideally, if a woman can space them a little bit, it's better, ideally, but strictly speaking, there's no need to even space them. She can do a consecutive Hefsek Tahara just to produce that one clean Hefsek Tahara before Shtiyah. Of course, the downside is if she does a lot of Hefsek Tahara and she irritates herself on the last one, and she has blood on the last Hefsek Tahara, even if the other ones were clean, then the one that she irritates herself on, which has blood, and we're not sure if we can't prove it's an irritation, is going to be a problem because that was the last one that was done and that's blood. So the other ones that were done are irrelevant because she has blood on the last one. So it's always important to balance irritation with Hefsek Tahara, but it's halakhically speaking, it's totally okay to do more than one Hefsek Tahara, even in quick succession, to ascertain that her blood stopped and to make sure to attain that clean Hefsek Tahara. The bedichos of the Zayin Nekiyim. The Shulchan Aruch says l'chatchila bedichos should be done twice a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. However, other Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch himself is a das yachid. According to most Rishonim, only one bedicha a day is necessary. How do we paskin? So the classic approach is like the Shulchan Aruch to do two bedichos a day. But in case of doubt, one should speak to one's Rav. Some poskim, Rav Willard, usually tells people to only do one bedicha every day. Others think that no, one should keep the Shulchan Aruch and do two bedichos. So whoever you ask your normal shaylos to, ask him how many bedichos should be done in a normal situation, two a day or one a day. Some posts will say to start off with two, and then if there's any concern of irritation, to reduce it to one. In such a situation, of course, three most important words in Nida, Asei, Lecha, Rav. B'di'evad though, the bare minimum according to the Shulchan Aruch and everyone, is only the B'dicha of day one and the B'dicha of day seven. If any of the B'dichos of the middle ones, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six, are forgotten, whether it's one or an entire day, as long as day one and seven are done, there's usually ground feeling it. But if day one and seven are forgotten, there's a serious problem. Which is why even if a woman is in a situation perhaps of severe irritation, that her posik tells her she should only do bedicha day one and day seven, usually that posik would also tell her to do, let's say, day one, three, and seven. Because if she would forget day seven, she did day one and three, then at least if she forgets day seven, day three can become her new one, and then she'll do day 3 and 9, which would now be her day 1 and 7. So in theory, day 1 and 7 are enough, b'di'evad, but even in such a situation, it's not always prudent to do so, because if she forgets day 7, day 1 and 8 don't count. If she does day 1, 3 and 7, or day 1, 2 and 7, then at least she forgets day 7, it can become 2 and 8, which is really 1 and 7, or 3 and 9, which is 1 and 7 instead as well. B'dichos for any given day must be before Shia as well, which means the B'dichah of day 1 must be before Shia of day 1. B'dichah of day 7 must be before day 7. What if B'dichah is done late at night? So then it'll count for one of the other days. Meaning, let's say, if she does B'dichah at night, it'll count the next day will be day 1. But it cannot count day 1, B'dichah cannot be before Shia. Again, not at Shia, not a minute later, must be before Shia. What if B'dichah is at night also? That's what we're supposed to. Do we presume B'dichah is okay at night? The Chazanish says B'dichah is okay at night. Others presume B'dichah is okay at night as well. Machlokes is opposed to him. That's a situation of Shaila. But everyone agrees that if you do B'dichah at night, it won't count for that day, the day that was the previous day. It only counts for the next day, because once it's night, it's already night. Any amount of blood found in B'dichah cloth, any amount whatsoever, is a problem. It's an internal B'dichah. Anything internal, even a tiny bit, is a problem. Which is why every B'dichah which is, has a tiny bit of blood, should never be thrown out. It's a very serious shaila. However, here, more than perhaps any area of Hilchos Nida, the issue of maros, situation of dam, a person must have shailas, because as people can attest to from experience, what a person considers red and what a rav considers red are not the same thing at all. You think, oh, this is, that's it, there's no shaila. This bichlal is filthy, there's no question here. And comes out totally tahara. It's very important, asei lecha rav, ask. It's known that chassidim have a reputation, chassidish apostolim, being more meitil in hilchos nida, hilchos tzamin, in maros. So there's a story they say that once a chassidish apostolim was driving, went through the light, and he got pulled over by the police. The police said to him, excuse me, sir, you just went through a red light. He said, red? That wasn't red. And although it's a joke, it's an important yisod. In all probability, if the color of a red light would come on a bicha cloth, a woman would be tahara, even though it's red. That's a very unnatural red to have in the body. And there are many cases that even if you think it's red, sometimes it could be a thread. It could be some sort of coloring. It could be makeup. And certainly in many situations that you think it's red, it's not red. Asel harav. Ask. It doesn't hurt. And it's a chus for a rav to answer. And it's very important for you to ask the shaila. Never think, this is just something we can't just give up, throw in the towel. Never. You never know in any situation. Always make sure to ask. And not only that, it's important to realize that often people think that they have to ask the shaila right away. That's not always true. Because if you think about it, and any day, let's say there's a bedikah for day 1, 2, and 3, which is done, and you're not sure if the bedikah of day 1, 2, and 3 are good. So those three bedikahs, those 3 days, you're not sure if they're good. Ask the Rav. Whenever the Rav can give you an answer, then those bedikahs, he'll give you a psak on those bedikahs. And turns out, if day 1 and 2 were good, and day 3 was good, then you know those were day 1, 2, and 3. Let's say day 1 and 2 were bad, only day 3 was good. So it turns out, day 1 and 2 were nothing. Those were still days of a period. And day 1 was day of the Hefsaftara. But usually there's not an emergency to know the specific psak on any bedikah at that minute. Because whatever the Rav tells you, that's going to be able to let you line up and figure out, oh, okay, so these 3 were good, these 3 days were not good, this day was good. That means I know that Zayakim started on this day. There's no need to know specifically on any day what day you're counting at to the other. Wearing white garments, the third aspect of the Zayakim. That means, garments means only whatever is closest to one's body. Usually that means underwear. So one should wear white undergarments during the Zaynatim. Rav Moshe writes, if one's wearing white undergarments, there's no need to wear white sheets. Even though the postman talked about white sheets, white pajamas, as long as one wears white undergarments, there's no need to have anything else that's white, because of any blood that will come on the undergarments instead. Any blood that's found on white undergarments is only a kesem. It's external. And has the same leniency as a kesem, which means if it's less than the sheer dris, less than the size of a penny on a white undergarment is tahara. So let's say a woman is trying to get her Zaynatim or clean days, she has clean beditos, but during the middle of the day she has spotting. If she has her spotting on white undergarments, she's totally allowed to change her undergarments a few times in the day to make sure that in no one time does she have more than the sheer dris. There's no halakha for her to only put on white undergarments in the morning and then wait until the day and see what happens at the end of the day. Do I have enough that's a sheer dris or not? She's allowed to change them 5 times a day if she wants, in order to make sure that no one time that she has any spot which is the size of a dris. In some situations, a rav will advise a woman, even during Zaynatim, to ignore this min of ashnas and to wear colored garments. If she has a severe spotting problem, the bedichos come out clean, but there's a problem with spotting, a rav would often advise her to wear colored garments in order to make sure that there is no problem with spotting, because we know that colored garments don't have a problem with psamim. Ideally, during Zaynatim, she should wear the white garments, but if not, sometimes you have to be meitel. But in any other situation, aside from the Zaynatim, of course, avoid wearing white altogether. The last point for tonight, we're going to discuss is the halacha of tevila. Tevila, done on the night after the Zaynatim is over, should not be delayed. Even if it's inconvenient, even if it might entail a little bit of traveling, tevila should not be delayed. Husband and wife are separate long enough. It's important that as soon as they can be together, they should reunite and be together. In fact, there's a Ramah that people sometimes misunderstand. In the days of the Gemara, it was well known to man and woman alike, if a woman was a Nida, if a man was a Balkari. Because in the days of the Mishnah, they had to keep Tumah V'Tahara. So since in the days of the Mishnah, days of the Beis HaMikdash, they had to keep Tumah V'Tahara, people had special clothing for Nidos, for Balkari. Everyone knew people's, what we would call, private business. But the Ramah writes that nowadays, the women have a minhag to keep the night they're going to the mikvah private. Why? Because there's only one reason a woman goes to the mikvah. What's that? To be with her husband. So if a woman would advertise to everyone, I'm going to the mikvah tonight, it's going to be as if she's advertising to everyone that she's going to be intimately with her husband tonight. That's not proper. That's not sunnah. So the Ramah writes, nowadays, since nida is only related to sexual relations between husband and wife, a woman keeps private about when she's going to the mikvah. However, if it's necessary, then sometimes a person can know. For example, let's say a woman is going to her parents' house for Shabbos, and she needs to go to the mikvah. So ideally, if she can avoid telling even her mother, it's more ideal, for sure. But if she can't avoid telling her mother, then her mother, if she needs her mother to touch the kids in order for her to be able to go to the mikvah, okay, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not a violation of tznius in order to let one person know if necessary. Again, it's not ideal, but in such a situation, it's always a matter of balance to make sure that the halachos of Taras HaMishpacha are kept private, on the other hand, to facilitate going to the mikvah. But sometimes people are a little bit too open. There's a Rebbetzin who told me she was shopping in her community, and she was at the takeout counter in a grocery store, and a woman said to her, oh, I am buying all this food because my daughter told me she's going to the mikvah tonight, so I have to make sure that I can take care of all the food for her. So the mother shouldn't know, the Rebbetzin shouldn't know, but during the day of the week, stam for a woman to tell her mother, and for the person to be so free with it, that's just ridiculous. It's against the middle of the Ramah says. It's not right. A person should be tsanua, of course. But within reason. There are certain mikvahs that are built more recently that have passcodes and secret ways of husbands knowing when their wives are coming out. They're built in such a way that no woman will ever see another woman in the mikvah. So no mother will see her daughter, no family member will ever see a family member, no friend will see their friend to know when they're in the mikvah. You have to wonder if that's bordering a little bit on obsession. And it sometimes can create this feeling of, oh, it's such an embarrassing thing, I'm going to the mikvah. It's not embarrassing, it's a beautiful mitzvah. We try within reason to keep it tsanua. But sometimes to be obsessive like that, sometimes cause people to feel so private about it, that they sometimes keep it private when it's not correct. And it's always important to have the balance between privacy and a healthy knowledge if necessary. For a lot of people to know, it's ridiculous. But if it's for a close relative sometimes to know, there's a certain situation people have, a person can't go to the mikvah herself. So if she can't do it for herself, a person, let's say, is disabled. So of course people need to know, people need to help her. That's what she's supposed to do. What can she do? Sometimes more than one person, within reason. But to keep it totally private is usually good, but not always good. To keep it public, of course, is terrible. Which is why it's very, very disappointing that, unfortunately, the mikvah in Washington Heights complains constantly that there are men that walk their wives to the mikvah and stay within the vicinity of the mikvah, which is a flagrant violation of tznius. A man can't stand outside the mikvah and wait for his wife, because then he sees other people coming out of the mikvah. That's very inappropriate, highly inappropriate. If a man needs to walk his wife to the mikvah, he should walk her to the mikvah and stay in Dumrov, which is a block away, stay in Voriz, which is a block away, stay somewhere which is not right near the mikvah. It's highly inappropriate. How can a man stay right near the mikvah in order to see if his wife, make sure his wife is safe? Obviously he's concerned about his wife's safety. The mikvah lady even wrote an email. She said that if any woman is concerned about her safety, she'll take the responsibility for herself to walk the woman to wherever she's going. For a man to walk and stay right in front of the mikvah, it's terrible, whether it's in a car or in a car service or in person. How are you talking? How could that be? It's almost something so basic that it's hard to imagine the mikvah even had to complain about such a thing. For a man to stay right near the mikvah is terrible. It's a basic violation of tznius. It's not right to know who's going to the mikvah. Of course, to stay far away is something which he's concerned. You have to have a balance, how close to be and how far to be. And it's always important to have balance in general with the issue of being tsanua and having others help if necessary. Tevila must be at night. It must be something which is done at night after nightfall, and it's done even on Shabbos. Ideally at night, we're made till even 20 minutes after night is okay. But sometimes you're at the mercy of your own community. Communities sometimes have rules. They don't let you do it 20 minutes after nightfall. They have their own rules when they open up. You can't fight City Hall. If they say you have to go later, you have to go later. But ideally, if it's up to you, you can go even 20 minutes after Shtiyah is enough. We presume there's a very matal opinion of Seis, for the matter of going to the mikvah. But it applies even on Shabbos. So on Shabbos also, when she goes to the mikvah on Friday night, usually she has to make, in most communities, she has to make an appointment in order to go to the mikvah on Friday night. She should call up, make an appointment, and go the time that she can. And in some communities, if a woman's going to have a lot of company, there's a chav she can do. She can go to the mikveh, let's say, 11 o'clock at night. She sleeps with the mikveh lady and makes an appointment for much later, so that often helps, because if she goes to the mikveh at 6 o'clock p.m., she's having company Friday night, her family's over, she can't just run out and go to the mikveh. She sleeps with the mikveh lady and she can go 11 o'clock that night after the meal, then sometimes it relates, and not every community is going to allow that to happen, but it's an idea that sometimes you can have up your sleeve, that sometimes going to the mikveh Friday night doesn't mean Friday night right as Shabbos comes in, it could be much later Friday night, if she can't. Ideally, she should go Friday night if she can. In Muncie, communities that can afford it build Friday night mikvahs, because the big mikvah in Muncie is far away from other mikvahs. Women can't walk there on Friday night, so if they can afford it, they build small Friday night mikvahs. If a woman lives in a place where they didn't build a Friday night mikvah, she can't go. If you can't do it, you can't do it. But ideally, even Friday night, a woman should go to the mikvah, even if it's going to be a little bit inconvenient, in order to make sure that she can do it. Before she does the mitzvah, before she has to remove all the chatzitzos, anything which is going to cause any separation between her body and the mitzvah. And in any situation, such as a wound, a broken bone, dental work, ear infection, we again, of course, have the most important rule, asei v'charav. Before one does the mitzvah, she should also take a bath or a shower. Ideal if she can take a bath, but a shower is also okay. Chatchila should span both day to go from day till night when she's going to the mikveh. That's only chatzilah, because most people in today's busy life just can't do it. Most people can't be in the shower or in the bath from day till night. So ideally, if she can't do it from day till night, she can either do it at night when she comes home from work, let's say before she goes to the mikveh, or even early in the morning that day before she goes to the mikveh. Either one is okay with the other. We should be zocha bezeh Hashem to keep the laws of Taras Mishpacha, to all have mishpachos which are tahoros. Mishpachos, which Be'ez Hashem will see the ring of Mashiach, where in Hilchos Nida is not only something private, but it's Nodeya, Be'ez Hashem, to the beauty of Tuma, Vitara, Vinyan, Beis HaMikdash B'mheira. We're going to have, Be'ez Hashem, the next part of the series. We'll talk about Vestos and Harchotos a week from tonight, 9 o'clock next Tuesday. And before Ma'ariv, any questions anyone has, they want to ask publicly, they can ask publicly, or else they can ask privately. There's also an email address we have, shearqs@gmail.com, if anyone wants to submit anything more clandestine fashion. Any questions before we start, Mariv? In theory, right. In theory, she's going to have to. But usually, practically, if it's less than a sheared wrist, so it depends. When will we say the real halakha of tibas amat kachardol is going to apply? But in most situations, once it's less than a sheared wrist, it's not going to be necessary. If we could determine somehow that tibas amat kachardol was really a period, it would be a problem. Pragmatically, usually it's not. Usually it's going to be a test. Right. But in theory, if it could be a period, if it came with Ardasha, let's say, and there's the Gemara, even that's going to create a chiyuv to say zainati. So that's not so pashut. That's much more of a shaila. Because if it's going to be floating in the water, if it's in the water itself, that's not necessarily going to be something which is not matamal tuma. That's Rabbi the Badia Shulchan has a discussion. Ezra Schwartz was ma'orah once. What's the halacha? If it's situational, usually if in the toilet water there's also urination. So maybe we could say that tzavonim, it's going to be something which is colored. It's an interesting question. I think Ezra Schwartz wants to bring us a raya that sometimes pastels are not considered, are sometimes yes or no considered white, because if we talk about urination, which would sometimes be dark, but it's yellow, so that's more of a complex style. Right, that's for sure. For example, let's say, not even that they signed out together because they were busy. Let's say he's on a business trip. He's out of town. He's out of town for 2 days, and then her period starts, and it's a very short period, it's 3 days. So the Shulchan Aruch says that cannot count. Even though technically we know there was no way. Lo plog, that's a lo plog. Lo plog means Chazal made it as a special din. But if it's a situation where halakhically it could be that they were not allowed to be together, that's already outside their own lo plog. Before we invite any other questions? Shtayach, shtayach.